Today, property signs for the 8th of July 2021. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. On today's show, we look further at that recent RBA outing. There's more pressure from MPs to allow prospective first-time buyers to access their super, and AMP continues to shrink as it sells off more businesses. But first, as Australian Broker reported, the Reserve Bank of Australia has called time on the era of low interest rates, setting the stage for an interest rate rise. The initial statement that the cash rate would not rise from 0.1%, as expected, But later in the day, Government Philip Lowe gave a rare press conference to explain that the central bank would be taking other measures to stem the current spiralling housing market. Lowe said that they'll be monitoring trends in housing borrowing carefully in order to inject an element of control into the exploding property market, especially with the rising spectra of household debt that goes hand in hand with increased property buying. What neither APRA nor the Reserve Bank wants to see is credit growing too quickly relative to people's income, said Lowe. It's not in the country's long-term interest to have debt increasing at a much higher rate than people's income. Pause there, because of course that is precisely what's been happening for the last decade plus. Funny that they've suddenly woken up to it now. If we saw a large and sustained gap in household credit growth relative to income growth, then we would be looking at various policy responses, he said. That said, the bank said that they would not shift on the cash rate ahead of schedule and are instead employing other means to change market conditions. For the cash guidance to fundamentally shift from 2024 to 2023, we would need to see strong, unequivocal evidence that the pickup in the economy is translating into wages growth and inflation more quickly than we had expected, he said in his media conference. There are those really fundamental factors that have kept wages growth low for decades, so we would need to be convinced these factors have gone away and been replaced by a new set of factors, he said. And the RBA also announced a program of bond buying from the government that they hope will lift wages growth and inflation will continue. They are already the single biggest purchaser of bonds and thus one of the major funders of the current government subsidies. And it's thought that around 30% of all Australian government bonds will be bought by the RBA by November. The RBA is performing a fine balancing act, said Jay Alawaya, mortgage specialist at Your Mortgage Broker. It needs to respond to an economy that is no longer looking like it's about to jump over North Head, but is instead taking flight over the harbour, whilst being mindful that a lockdown and extended border closure could mean that the wind can change unexpectedly. As expected by most, the rates have been left in their place, but the bank has tapered their bond purchase program from $5 billion a week to $4 billion. Whilst there is clear acceptance that the economy is doing much better than expected, there is also the reality of a global economy still working out how to operate in this disjointed, lockdown-prone, restriction, travel-bubbled, semi-vaccinated, remotely working world. This is where the CBA feels differently and is certain that rates will need to go up well before the timeline being suggested by the RBA. Where Governor Lowe is saying this improvement has widened the range of plausible scenarios for the cash rate, the largest lender in the country believes the rates will need to be increased sooner. Considering its size, asset holdings, influence on the market, many other banks are now also thinking that other plausible scenarios are more plausible. Whilst the RBA continues to have its focus on inflation and wages growth, it may need to end up raising its rate due to worryingly high property and other asset valuations. In the middle of all this is your property owner. As a broker, we are telling clients to make sure they also keep sight of their overall situation, long-term goals, and what it is they are trying to achieve. The conversation today must be more than just rates, because there are too many plausible possibilities available, he said. Now elsewhere, Alan Kohler in the New Daily wrote that the most interesting part of Tuesday's statement by Reserve Bank Governor Philip Lowe, by a mile, was that he said he'd given up forecasting. He said the RBA is not going to increase the cash rate until inflation is sustainably within the 2-3% band, and then added, it is not enough for inflation to be forecast in this range. We want to see results before we change interest rates. The RBA has 1,348 staff, including about 400 economists, and when they arrive at work each day, their job used to be straightforward, well, fairly straightforward at least, to forecast, that is, to head inflation off before it happened. And the rule of thumb was that if unemployment got to 5%, inflation would follow, so they forecast on making sure at least 600,000 to 700,000 souls were on the dole. Unemployment hit 5% in 2005 and kept going down to 4%, so the RBA, foreseeing inflation, began rapid-fire rate hikes from 5.5% to 7.25%. Then along came the GFC and down interest rates went. In 2011, unemployment hit 5% again, and the RBA, once again foreseeing inflation, hit the brakes, putting the cash rate up from 3 to 4.75%. But through it all, inflation kept trending down, each peak lower than the last. Those rate increases put a lot of people out of work, but with the benefit of hindsight, they weren't needed. It's a broken theory. So as Dr. Lowe also acknowledges now, the assumed inverse relationship between unemployment and inflation, known as the Phillips curve, has broken down, at least for the moment. It was invented by a Kiwi economist named Bill Phillips in 1958, but it always worked better in theory than in practice. But now digitalization, automation, and cloud computing have destroyed it entirely by lowering costs and increasing competition for businesses and workers. Zero marginal cost and not much price power equals not much inflation as well. So unemployment can go much lower than previously thought without stirring inflation. So what now? Well, how do central banks work out what to do if they can't just watch unemployment to see when inflation is around the corner? After all, monetary policy has a lag of about 12 months, so you have to forecast 12 months ahead, don't you? Because that's how long it takes for your actions to have an effect. Well, it's true, but it doesn't matter. It's all a mess because the Phillips curve doesn't work anymore. So this time around, interest rates won't be increased until inflation actually landed. And it's about time, said Kohler. When will that be? Well, 2024, Dr. Lowe thinks. The markets think 2023. A few economists think late 2022. Truth is, nobody has the faintest clue. Uncertainty abounds. The economic uncertainties brought about by technological revolutions, plus the aging of the population, globalization, and the unprecedented amount of debt in the world, has now been joined by three more uncertainties: the pandemic, China, and climate change. Dr. Lowe said on Tuesday, by the end of the year, within 6 months, most of us will be vaccinated. Our lives will start to return to normal. We'll be able to travel again, and businesses will be able to do the things they need to do. Well, yes, we hope so, except that the virus keeps mutating. In other countries, the Delta strain is making vaccinated people sick. And China's Sinovac doesn't seem to be working very well against it all. What's more, the spike in COVID cases in largely vaccinated countries like the UK and Israel are putting the timetable for getting back to normal into question. And meanwhile, Australia's problems with its own trading partner have been papered over by the iron ore boom. Boom, then bust, he says. The high rise in the price and exported volumes of our largest export are covering up the fact that the rest of our trade with China is in trouble, and China is working very hard to create alternatives to Australia for iron ore as well. In Africa, the new iron ore mines in Africa are about 5 years off, but it's unlikely the iron ore boom will last that long anyway. China will have to restructure its economy away from construction if it's to meet its own carbon emission targets of net zero emissions by 2060, as will every country after net zero by 2050 becomes the global standard this year. Defeating climate change is going to require a fundamental economic reset, starting now. Given the amount of investment needed, it might result in an inflationary stimulus, and food prices are already rising fast because of the hot Northern Hemisphere summer. Against that, the financial system is going to come under increasing strain as global warming affects asset prices and the ability of debtors to service their loans. How that plays out is anybody's guess. So yes, it's not a bad idea to give up forecasting, all things considered. And one of the big issues is wages growth, or the lack of it, as Gareth Hutchins wrote in the ABC News site. Wage dynamics have shifted a tiny bit in some sectors over the last 12 months, but how long will it be for wages to pick up more broadly? Speaking after the RBA's board meeting on Tuesday, he said borders would probably have to stay closed for another 18 months to 2 years before wage dynamics became, quote, quite different. That is, before wages dynamics generally shifted in workers' favours, and he doubts we'll get to that point. He says he's working under the assumption that borders would gradually be reopened over the next year, particularly for workers who have skills that are in short supply. So he's assuming employers will get their wish, and so there won't be any broad-based wage increases brought about by our borders remaining shut. Also said that when borders reopened, some of the nascent wages pressures that started to build in some sectors of the economy would come out of the system. However, he also said he really wants to see economic conditions improve to the point where wages and inflation pick up noticeably in Australia. Should Australians expect to go back to the long, slow grind of wages pressure, hopefully building just over the horizon, but never quite materialising like we experienced in the years before the pandemic era? Dr. Lowe didn't say it this week, but that outcome will depend on lots of things, including the state of the global economy in coming years and the willingness of Australia's governments to keep stimulating demand. But overall, he said he thought it would be good for the economy generally if borders reopened sooner rather than later. It will be good news at the individual level because people will be able to go and catch up with family and friends and travel internationally again. But it's also important for businesses, he said. We hear from businesses that that's one of the reasons why they're not investing at the moment, because they can't get skilled workers from overseas to put in place new capital equipment or to test it out. So it's affecting business investment. And we'll also have to keep an eye on our dollar. Australia's currency could be entering a period where it will be noticeably weaker than other currencies. Why? Because, according to Dr. Lowe, Australia will probably lag other developed nations in moving away from record low borrowing costs, because the RBA wants to keep interest rates exceptionally low to encourage economic activity and jobs growth. He said he was determined to reach the RBA's 2 to 3% inflation target, and that would require getting wages growth back above 3%. We want to make sure that happens, and we'll keep the monetary stimulus going until it does, he said. Because the inflation and wage outcomes have been lower in Australia than other places, we're going to keep the stimulus going probably longer than other countries. And what does that mean? Well, it means that if the level of interest rates in Australia is going to remain lower than other countries and for a long period, that could put downward pressure on the value of the dollar for an extended amount of time. And the weaker dollar would benefit Australia's exporters, but not its importers, nor anyone planning to travel overseas when borders finally reopen. Of course, it would make it cheaper for tourists to visit Australia if and when the borders open. Liberal MP Tim Wilson has grilled the major banks on what regulatory changes would be needed to allow first home buyers to drain their superannuation for housing deposits. The House of Economics Committee on Economics has released the responses of a number of banks to a question from Tim Wilson around raiding superannuation savings for purchasing a house. Mr. Wilson, who is the chair of the committee, had previously rallied for early access of superannuation savings for first home buyers to place towards home deposits, despite Superannuation Minister Jane Hume denying the government would consider implementing such a measure. And he's also explored the idea during parliamentary hearings, where the Standing Committee has summoned chief executives from the banking industry. During a hearing, Westpac had indicated it would explore whether it would be able to develop a product that uses super as a form of security in the event that housing for super was permitted by law. Mr. Wilson then asked the CEOs of the big four banks, a number of other non-majors, what legislative changes would be required to allow them to devise a product that uses super as a form of security for consumers buying their first home. Well, according to CBA, the exact changes would depend on how the scheme was intended to operate. ANZ listed laws in superannuation, bankruptcy, security, taxation, prudential regulation, all as potential hurdles. A lender would need to be able to obtain effective security over the borrower's interest in their super fund, the bank noted. An interest in a super fund generally entitles the beneficiary to cash their benefits when a condition of release is met, for example, turning 65 or attaining the preservation age and retiring, ANZ said. Assuming that the lender was able to perfect legal security over the interest, it would also need to be able to access funds upon a default occurring rather than waiting for a condition of release to be met, which may be sometime in the future and may be subject to change. This may require a new condition of release connected with the enforcement of a lender's security. And NAB pointed to the Superannuation Industry Act of 1993, which includes safeguards to protect super funds against action from third parties. There is a range of factors a financial institution will need to consider in developing any product utilizing superannuation as a form of security against a loan, if this was government policy, the bank stated. These range from legislative and regulatory to commercial risk settings and prudent lending considerations. These would need to include addressing the rights of recourse to the payment stream of funds in the superannuation fund if the customer defaulted on the loan. And Westpac similarly noted restrictions on the ability of super members to obtain early access to the retirement funds, as well as limits on the purpose for which super trustees exercise its powers, primarily to provide benefits for members' retirement, and on the ability to grant security over funds held in trust. These limitations mean superannuation funds are not suitable as a form of security for a loan, Westpac said. The Bankruptcy Act of 1966 also excludes the interest of a bankrupt person in a regulated super fund from the property divisible among creditors, while the Personal Property Securities Act of 2009 excludes from the Personal Property Securities Register interest that people have as members of a super fund. The tax law would need to be considered, if any, the granting or enforcement of security over the superannuation interest would have for the borrower, ANZ. And meanwhile, Bendigo and Adelaide Bank commented that current responsible lending rules would need to be reviewed to enable a super for housing product. Mr. Wilson's early super access for housing notions has been supported by Liberal Senator Andrew Bragg. In February, Mr. Wilson also proposed that super funds should be banned from investing in property if Australians can't use their own retirement savings to buy houses. So this is a big complex thing. I'm not sure it's going to go anywhere. And finally, the deconstruction of AMP continues, with AMP Limited agreeing to sell AMP's capital, global equities and fixed income business for a consideration of up to $185 million to Macquarie. Under the sale agreement, AMP Capital capabilities in Australia and global listed equities and global fixed income will be combined with Macquarie's public investments platform. AMP's capital GEFI business currently manages around $60 billion Australian dollars in assets under management for AMP Australia, as well as a number of external institutional, retail and direct clients. The sale delivers on AMP Capital's strategy to focus on high growth opportunities in private markets across the real estate, the infrastructure and associated areas, and is an important step in preparing the business for its planned demerger from AMP in the first half of 2022. The transaction delivers on the previously announced strategy for the AMP Capital Public Markets business to increase the scale of GEFI through partnership or sale. And AMP Capital is also in the process of transferring the multi-asset group business to AMP Australia to create an end-to-end superannuation and investment platform business. Post-completion, GEFI's asset under management investment teams focused on GEFI's clients around the world and other key staff will transfer to Macquarie, and Macquarie Asset Management is expected to have around $720 billion Australian dollars under management post the transaction completion. Subject to customary closing conditions being met, the transaction is expected to close in the first quarter of 2022. And the AMP share price rose following the move. But this continues the deconstruction of AMP, and I'm still not clear what their real strategy is. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.